Hello, this is your Polycast for Wednesday, June 1st, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, the ISIS trial nears a close and the latest flashpoint in the fight over copper-nickel mining. Governor Mark Dayton has signed a bill that regulates the use of police body cameras, Tim Pugmire reports.
The measure passed in the final weekend of the 2016 session will make most of the video recordings inaccessible to the public. Lawmakers removed a provision at Dayton's request to allow law enforcement officers to review recordings before writing incident reports. DFL Senator Ron Latz of St. Louis Park said the measure will ultimately bring greater accountability.
Going to make it very possible for any law enforcement agency that wants to adopt body cameras to go ahead and do so. That's the most important achievement here.
In other action, Dayton vetoed the omnibus pension bill. He signed the LCCMR bill, but line item vetoed seven projects. Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News.
The campaign for control of the Minnesota legislature is coming into sharper focus now that the window for candidate filings is closed. Brian Baxt has that.
House Republicans and Senate Democrats enter the year with majorities to defend. Each can afford only five net losses to keep power. House Speaker Kurt Dowd says the Republican strategy isn't just about protecting incumbents.
We are also optimistic we are not going to make the mistake that the Democrats made 2 years ago and be only on defense. We will be on offense.
House Minority Leader Paul Thiessen says the electoral wins are tough to gauge.
You know, I think there's probably 20 to 25 seats that are going to be truly competitive in the state, and that kind of with the caveat that this is maybe the strangest political year at the presidential level that I've ever seen, and so I don't know what that means for making more or less seats competitive.
This year's state primary is August 9th, with the general election 3 months later. Brian Baxt, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
The last of three defense attorneys is expected to give his closing argument this morning in the trial of three Somali Americans charged with conspiring to join the extremist group ISIS and commit murder abroad. In the fourth week of the trial, prosecutors plan to offer their rebuttal later today, followed by jury instructions from the judge. Tawahali Saikautau reports.
In his closing argument, Assistant U.S. Attorney John Dougherty told jurors the three defendants showed exceptionally persistent efforts to travel to Syria to join ISIS. There were three phases to the conspiracy, he said, starting in the spring of 2014 and ending in the arrest of the three young men in April of 2015. Citing excerpts of secretly recorded conversations by an FBI informant, Dougherty said the three defendants, Guled Omar, Abdirahman Daoud, and Mohamed Farah, quote, convict themselves with the words that come out of their own mouths. If you decide not to believe me, he said, the tapes are still there. For more than 2 hours, Dougherty talked about the role each defendant had in the alleged conspiracy, returning repeatedly to testimony by key witnesses, including former friends of the defendants, who already pled guilty to conspiring to offer material support to ISIS. But Dougherty focused on the conspiracy to murder abroad, saying Omar, for example, talked about killing Turkish officers, Daoud talked about getting an AK-47 in Syria, and Farah defended the burning of a Jordanian pilot. He said the defendants were going to put themselves at the terror group's disposal, quote, they were going to kill. When it was the defense's turn, Murad Mohammed, who represents defendant Mohamed Farah, asked jurors if watching an ISIS video is an agreement to kill anyone or provide material support to a terrorist organization. He called the defendants kids and asked, quote, what exactly are these kids accused of? Mohammed said the paintball the defendants played is a recreational sport, not training for war. He raised the question of entrapment by an FBI informant who offered fake Canadian passports to the Twin Cities men. In his words, bottom line, these kids were dead in the water. Mohammed said the term conspiracy group is just the government's label of the defendants. Referring to his client Farah watching an ISIS video and laughing, he said, quote, this is an immature young man reacting to graphic videos. It's still not a crime. He added, is wanting to die a martyr, no matter how unsavory that may be to accept, a crime? Bruce Nestor, who represents defendant Abdirahman Daoud, began his closing argument with the same story as his opening statement, asking what was on the mind of his client during a trip to California. For 2 hours, Nestor discussed testimony by three of the government's key witnesses, Abdullahi Yusuf, Abdurazak Warsame, and Abdurrahman Bashir, whom he called a three-legged stool you wouldn't let your child sit on. Nestor said Yusuf couldn't separate fact from fiction. Warsame gave leading and tainted testimony, and Bashir, the informant, was a paid true believer. He told the jurors, in his words, "I don't want your sympathy or prejudice because this is a terrorism trial. I want a just verdict." Glenn Bruder, attorney for defendant Gulet Omar, said he might need nearly 2 hours for his closing arguments.
Thank you all for being here today. My name is Jess Sundin.
Outside the federal courthouse, demonstrators rallied again in support of the families of the defendants, as they've done weekly since the beginning of the trial. The activists represent the Twin Cities Coalition for Justice for Jamar, Black Lives Matter, and Minnesotans Against Islamophobia. One of the mothers of the defendants, Ayan Farah, thanked the group for coming out.
She said that race and religion shouldn't play a factor when the jury looks at her kids. She also echoes what the defense team said today about prejudice in the case.
Farah said she's confident the all-white jury will find her son and the other two defendants not guilty of all charges. If convicted, all three could face up to life in prison. Dua Lee Saikautau, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
50 years ago today, two federal mineral leases were signed for rights to copper, nickel, and precious metals just south of what would become the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness. Those leases are now in the hands of a mining company called Twin Metals, but they expired 2.5 years ago. Their renewal has languished in Washington, where they've become the latest point of contention in a debate over whether mining should be considered so close to the BWCA. Dan Crocker has more.
The federal mineral leases for the area 7 miles south of Ely, where Twin Metals is proposing to build an underground mine, date back to 1966. They were first obtained by the International Nickel Company, which proposed a 1,000-foot-deep open-pit copper mine on the edge of the BWCA. But after a state moratorium to study the issue, copper prices tanked and the project fizzled. The Federal Bureau of Land Management has renewed the leases twice since then with little fanfare. But not this time. Congresswoman Betty McCollum, a Democrat who represents the East Metro area, has introduced a bill to prevent mining near the BWCA. She says those leases were granted before modern environmental laws were passed.
So BLM took a look at the leases and they were kind of like, yeah, we would never renew a lease without doing an environmental assessment. It would be irresponsible for us to do that.
The key question now is what exactly an environmental review of the leases would consider. Becky Rahm, who runs a campaign called Save the Boundary Waters, is pushing for a comprehensive assessment that would examine the potential impacts of copper nickel mining in the entire watershed that drains into the Boundary Waters before Twin Metals and other companies have even submitted specific mine plans.
It's not about a mine plan of operation. It's about this unique ecosystem. It's about the record of sulfide ore copper mining in the United States. It's about the value of the Boundary Waters and what risk is tolerable risk.
Rahm says a broad review should ask the question, is the water-rich Boundary Waters ecosystem, home to the nation's most popular wilderness area, the right place for copper mining?
That's the question, and that can only be answered on the front end, not through review of a mine plan looking at a model prepared by the mining company's engineering company.
Rahm says such a review could result in the Department of Interior making the area off-limits to mining for 20 years. That would be similar to a step the Obama administration took in 2012 when it banned uranium mining on land bordering the Grand Canyon. Twin Metals says conducting a full environmental impact statement on lease renewal applications would be unprecedented. Company officials declined an interview, but in a briefing provided to stakeholders last year, the company said conducting an EIS before they submit a mine plan of operation could only analyze hypothetical and speculative mining activities not yet proposed. 8th District Congressman Rick Nolan, a Democrat who represents the region, agrees.
And it seems to me awfully hard, if not impossible, to do an environmental assessment if you don't have a mining proposal in front of you.
The Bureau of Land Management says it's coordinating next steps with the U.S. Forest Service. And that looming federal decision has taken on even more significance since Governor Dayton laid out his strong opposition to mining near the Boundary Waters in March. He said Twin Meadows would no longer have access to state land to develop its project. Since then, Nolan says he's been assured there's no federal effort brewing to ban mining near the Boundary Waters. Frank Ongaro with the industry group Mining Minnesota says there's a process in place to review mining proposals, and it needs to be allowed to work.
We're very encouraged that it appears that the process will be allowed to move forward as it was intended without any administrative agency interference.
Ongaro says that process is working right now with the proposed Polymet mine. The company recently wrapped up more than 10 years of environmental review. It's expected to file its application for a permit to mine in the next few weeks. Dan Crocker, Minnesota Public Radio News, Duluth.
And that's your Polycast for this Wednesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.